Hey, this is Amanda Palmer and the Grand Theft Orchestra, and you're listening to WMFO Medford.
WMFO, Medford, 10:04 in the morning. Mike on the mic here till 11 a.m. Playing a bunch of freeform for you. Hey, let me tell you what we played, because if I didn't, it'd be really rude. I don't want to be rude, although I am sometimes. All right, started off that short set with an advanced single from Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds. It's called Alone on a Rope. Really great. Connor Oberst was next. A couple of years ago, he did a CD called Salutations, Till St. Dimphna Kicks Us Out. And the great Todd Rundgren was right there from a 1976 effort called Faithful. That was When I Pray, nice and, lots of percussion and melody. And what else do you want? Todd is God, they say. I believe him. All right, at 10:05 in the morning, really happy to welcome here, for the first time ever, Mr. Peter Parsek. Well, hello there.
Hey, Mike.
What the hell's going on?
Hey, thanks very much for having me.
Thanks very much for getting up so god-awful early.
I was already up. My cat woke me up.
Oh. They'll do that. Was it like with the pause on the saying like...
In this case, it was a particular cry.
Oh.
I can't sleep through it.
Well, I'm allergic to cats, so... Oh. Although I'm a dog lover, you know, but yeah, pets are the best.
Oh, without a doubt.
Even when they wake you.
Oh, no, without a doubt.
That's fine.
Without a doubt.
So, really happy. I can't believe you know... Well, you might have been here a long time ago. Yeah.
But this is a real pleasure, and it's an honor to be on your show. So.
Oh, thank you very much. It's an honor to have you here. I'm really, and I want to thank David P. Riley for setting this up and putting
you,
us
David.
In touch. Yeah, it's really good. So you're kind of a local guy, a couple states over, Connecticut, Middletown.
Yeah, Portland originally, and then in that general vicinity, Middletown, Haddam.
Yeah, and what was it like growing up in Connecticut back in the whenever it was?
I like Connecticut. You know,
it was a
good community. Particularly Portland was it was a really nice place to grow up. It was a brownstone town.
Portland, where's that in relation to anything I would know?
It's roughly between Hartford and New Haven.
Okay.
So it's a complicated place to live in terms of Yankees Red Sox.
Yeah.
But it's great because of the access to New York. Used to go to New York a lot, and
it's near the water. Given the name?
If you go more towards Brantford and so forth, yeah. But it was a great spot in terms of that access, and so I with friends I would go to Cafe Agogo and places like that.
Oh.
Heard some amazing music that was very inspiring and. Probably led me to want to play.
So how did that all start? I mean, here you are a kid growing up. I mean, you're in the school system. Did you learn to love music then? Did you take an instrument while a kid? How did this happen?
No. I was...
what happened to you?
I went bad. But I was in Catholic school.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry.
And no, yes, exactly. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I had good penmanship for about a month, and then they started hitting my hands, and I rebelled. But let me not get too far into that. But
no.
They told me that I had zero musical talent. There might be people who still agree with that. But, yeah, they told me I had no future doing that. So you asked me what happened. What happened is that I my mom remarried, and the guy she remarried was not very copacetic with me.
How old were you about that time?
I was getting into like 7th, 8th grade kind of thing.
Oh, all right. That's tough at any age.
Yeah, it's tough at any age. But the one thing he did is he bought me a radio. And I'm old enough where radios were actually physically large, like a small TV. Yeah. He bought me this radio, and I bought the biggest antenna I could carry.
Yeah.
Hooked it up to that thing and started listening at night. And because I didn't really want to hang around with him particularly.
Mm-hmm.
And so through doing that and through having the antenna, it took me out of Connecticut and actually took me into places like Chicago and West Virginia.
Ah, yeah.
So I was getting VON, WVON from Chicago. And I think it was a Wheeling, West Virginia station.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of stuff attracted you?
So I was hearing... country, rockabilly, and on VON, I first heard Muddy Waters and Howling Wolf, among others. So I went to my local record shop. At the time, it was Records.
Yep.
And I still love Records. Kept pretty much all of mine.
Yeah, we have a few of them here.
Yeah, I noticed. I love it.
Yeah.
And I ordered these records. I ordered The Best of Muddy Waters and Moanin' in the Moonlight by Howling Wolf, or Moaning at Midnight. I forget which is the album title and which is a song title. And these records came in, and there was a very, very nice white-haired woman, and now that I have white in my goatee, I can totally relate. And she looked at the records, and she said, "Where did you hear about these?" Because the Muddy record had this beautiful Don Bronstein photo of Muddy looking like Buddha with a bead of sweat and looking very handsome. And then on the Wolf record, there's a line drawing of a wolf howling at the moon.
It's amazing the things you remember.
Oh, and I said, "Ma'am, I heard them on the radio." And she said, "Well, you didn't hear those on WTIC." And I said, "No, I didn't," because WTIC was the middle of the road, like family-oriented station. I said, "No, I didn't. I heard them on my little radio. So,
Now, there's a difference between listening and playing.
Right. So I got these records home.
Yeah.
And I played them. I think I played The Wolf first. And the hair on my arm stood up as soon as he began to sing. Literally, as soon as he began to sing. And then I played The Muddy. And that moved me incredibly, too. And at that point, I was not playing. And I asked my mom if we could afford a guitar. And she said, well, we'll have to do green stamps. I don't know if anybody remembers those, but I'm old enough to remember them. You cash them in and you could get various products. And mm-hmm. I got a nylon string guitar. I wish I still had it.
Yeah.
So I got it home and I couldn't play a lick on it. I didn't know anything about it. And my mom came in when I was listening to those records and she said, wow, what do you think? And I said, if I could ever learn how to play guitar, I'd want to play with the feeling that's in these records. Like it's a total impossibility on one level, of course.
Yeah.
But just as a goal, as kind of a signpost. And but there was nobody around that I knew that knew how to do that stuff. I knew guys that were really good finger pickers. Great finger pickers, actually, and great singers. But I didn't know anybody that knew that stuff. So I stumbled in the dark for a long time. I sucked for a really long mm-hmm. time.
And as you got older and you got towards the end of high school, as kids will do, you want your independence. And you, but you took action. You started to look for things along these lines, and you ended up across the pond.
I did.
In London.
I did. And I was lucky because, on lots of levels. On one level, because my mom knew somebody who had a flat there, so I could stay for a little bit. But also because I kind of, really without knowing it, I had stumbled into a phase of the British blues boom.
Mm.
So there were...
Just where you needed to be.
Well, kind of exactly where yeah. I needed to be. It's almost like something unseen was guiding it, if you believe in that. Which I kind of do, but so when I say the British blues boom, of course everybody knows that there was Cream around at that time. There was the Jimi Hendrix experience. There was the Jeff Beck group with Rod Stewart. But there were a number of other people that weren't quite as well known.
Mm-hmm.
There was, most importantly to me, there was Peter Green and Fleetwood Mac.
Mm-hmm.
But there was John Mayall. There was Ainsley Dunbar with a guy named John Morrishead on guitar, who was amazing. There was... Chicken Shack with Stan Webb on guitar, and a number of other great bands. And because it was London, all of the best musicians were sort of converging there. So you could see amazing people,
mm-hmm.
you know, in little bars.
And did you get to do that?
Oh, multiple times.
Oh,
I saw Peter Green, Fleetwood Mac an incredible number of times and actually got to meet him very briefly.
All right.
And this was at the height of his powers,
uh-huh.
I mean, which were formidable.
I know that you had, I don't know if you want to call it a stroke of luck or whatever, you got to see Buddy Guy.
Oh,
but,
yes.
But that wasn't it. I mean, somehow...
That was later. That was later.
Yeah, I'm just moving ahead in time.
Okay.
I can shift time. I'm very, very... So moving ahead in time.
Okay, that's why we call it a free form.
Yeah. So later on, somehow you ended up getting backstage.
Yes.
Yeah, tell that story.
So I was and I am a huge Buddy Guy and Junior Wells fan.
Mm.
And this particular show was at Night Stage in Cambridge.
Oh, I know that place.
It was a great club, fantastic club. And I used to go there quite a bit. I was lucky to play there.
Oh,
a
wow.
few times with
yeah.
a band, opening for some great artists. So this particular day, or evening rather, I went to see Buddy and Junior, and I happened to land at a table with a group of people who had been, quote-unquote, following Buddy and Junior around the country,
okay.
partying.
Yeah.
It's exactly how they presented it to me.
Sure.
So they said, yeah, come on, sit down. Let's check them out. So we did, and it was a fabulous set. And then... Between sets, they went backstage to hang out with Buddy and Junior.
Wow.
And one of the folks said, hey, why don't you come? So I went. And I mean, I was hoping to get to meet Buddy and Junior because I, you know, love their music.
Mm-hmm.
And so they, that is these folks at the table, were really kind of interacting the most with Buddy and Junior. I didn't really get to, you know, I got to wave to them, say hi, but that was it. And at a certain point, they were doing stuff that I was trying to avoid doing, which I won't name, but they were doing things that were appropriate to that time that a lot of people were doing. Some people call it Peruvian.
Okay.
So, and so they were doing that, and I got pretty uncomfortable. Like, I didn't know what to do because I knew I didn't want to do that. But I didn't want to leave because I was still hoping maybe I'll get to meet him, yeah. You know? So really just totally out of nervousness, he had these guitars laying around that he wasn't actually using in the set.
Okay.
One was an ESP Strat. It was a white Strat. Had incredibly low action, which I like, and light strings. And it was just laying there. And normally I would not do this because I consider it rude.
Mm.
I've seen it done and I don't like it. But here, you know, I contradicted myself because I was so nervous and I just wanted to calm down.
And you didn't really cognate that, oh, this might be his guitar.
Oh, I knew it was his guitar.
Oh, you did?
Oh, no, I knew
That's ballsy.
I knew it had to be his guitar.
Oh, my God.
It was unconscious as only a Polish Sicilian can be.
Yeah.
So
I'll take your word for that.
So I just sort of fingered it a little bit, and it calmed me down. It did what I needed it to do. When I say fingered it, just like, you know, just kind of a, just really lightly, not like ostentatiously or not like, mm-hmm. you know, I wasn't doing like two hands.
Power chords.
Yeah, yeah, none of that.
Yeah.
And it was unplugged. It was an electric guitar unplugged. So there was really no, you know, not much sound. But at a certain point, I just sort of got lost in it because it was pleasant.
Yeah, right,
it was
right.
pleasant.
Yeah.
And I realized that the whole place had gone silent. This backstage had gone silent.
Yeah.
And I looked up, and there's my hero looking at me. And he's going to other people, like, shh. Like he wanted to hear it.
Huh.
And then he said an amazing thing to me, which was incredibly complimentary and very inspiring. And he didn't get mad that I had touched his guitar. I apologized, of course, immediately and profusely for touching his guitar.
Oh,
and he was
like,
man, I'm not even using that.
He also said something else to you.
He did, but it was very, very nice.
Can I say it?
You can say it.
He says, you're as bad as Eric Clapton.
That was really, I mean, that's very nice, and it was very inspiring, and it gave me a lot to aim towards.
Yeah.
A lot to shoot towards.
So obviously you were back in the States. I messed that up.
Yes.
You came back from London for whatever reason you do. You're back in Middletown, Connecticut.
Right.
And it was probably, I mean, sometime you finally decided to get serious about guitar and really practice.
Yes.
8-10 hours a day.
Yes.
Practice.
After London, I realized how far, how high the bar was set after seeing all the names, but also a bunch of people that nobody knew who were incredible. Jeff and Gary Green, Stan Cross, these were people that a lot of folks don't even know about, and they were playing at such a high level. So I knew the only way was I was going to have to either be a guitar owner or a guitar player.
And I know in London you didn't really play guitar in the band, but you played harmonica.
I played harp and sang.
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, because I was too embarrassed to play guitar for these guys.
Yep. So now you're practicing up, and you're like, Jesse, we're just saying it's time to put up or shut up.
Oh, yeah.
Got to join a band.
Absolutely.
So you did.
So I did.
Name of the first band was Nine Below Zero.
That's right.
Yep. How was that experience? Was that the first time you ever played in front of an audience? I mean, besides that was a stupid question. Let me go back.
No.
You did obviously in London with playing the harp and everything.
Right.
But I mean, in first band that you guys said, okay, we're ready to play out.
I think I might have played in my own trio, but that didn't really have a particular name before that. But with Nine Below, we were actually trying to play gigs on a regular basis, or at least a semi-regular basis. And how was that experience? It was incredibly inspiring because the band, first of all, the people who played in the rhythm section in that band, there were a string of them, and they were all incredible musicians. People like Marco Giovino, who's a world-class drummer, or Mike Levesque, also a world-class drummer, or occasionally Jay Bellerose, also a world-class drummer. And bassists included people like Larry Jackson, Ed Spargo. I mean, just like phenomenal rhythm sections in that band. And then the front line of it was Mike Fritz, who was a great like harp vocalist, and my dear friend who is now departed, Michael St. Peter, who sang and played saxophone. Very creative guy, sort of way ahead of the curve. He made sounds that were akin to Morphine before Morphine existed. The band.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
And just a very creative guy, amazing, soulful individual, and I miss him a lot.
And what was it, your experience in that band that got you some opportunities like the one I saw in your, the Pine Top Perkins?
Yes.
You got to play
exactly, directly related to that, because Nine Below made a record and in classic Nine Below fashion broke up right after we released it. So the chances of the record doing well were kind of, you know, torpedoed. But through making the record, one of the guys who engineered was also friendly and working with an individual from Maine named Randy Labby, who had a record label called Deluge.
Mm-hmm.
And Pine Top was making a record for Deluge. And so they had done some tracks with another guitar player and it sounded great. I think they wanted to get a different guy, but they couldn't afford it.
Okay.
Seriously, they couldn't afford it. So this engineer, Bob, came to me and he said, hey, would you be interested in being on a Pine Top Perkins record? This was like, what?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah.
So Bob gave me three tracks and he said, you need to particularly learn the piano figures because we want you to double the piano figures. So I went in, I did, you know, after I learned the stuff, I went in, and they seemed to like it.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't let me turn my amp up above 2. And they seemed to like it, and they let me do a few more. I never made a dime.
But you got paid in other ways.
Exactly, because then he was coming through, that is, he being Pine Top Perkins, was coming through on tour. And they said, well, would you be interested in playing with him on tour? I'm like, what? Yeah, I think I'm interested. And so that led to a whole other thing.
So, wow. Skip James.
Oh, I love Skip James.
Yeah. So you
inspiration.
Learned a lot from Skip James.
Well, I got to see him live.
Yeah.
I got to see him at Wesleyan University.
Right.
Now, when I say I learned something from him, I mean, obviously, besides hearing him play and sing both piano and guitar and his amazing vocals and those incredible songs, I also learned something about personal dignity as a performer from Skip James, because he was playing at Wesleyan and he was playing solo. He didn't have any other accompaniment. And he didn't have any amplifiers or any of that. This was when Unplugged was truly unplugged, other than the mic, you know, that he was singing into. I don't even know if they had a proper mic on his guitar. I'm trying to remember. I don't recall right now. But anyway, Skip James played. And if you've ever heard his music, it's riveting. I mean, it stops time. You were joking about moving time. Well, he was able to stop time when he sang and played. It's that moving, that riveting. And he was singing and playing, and people were talking, like really pretty significantly in this very quiet room. So you could hear what they were doing. And they had apparently paid Skip James a reasonable amount of do-re-mi to come and do this gig. He stopped.
Really?
He stopped. He was clearly upset.
Yeah.
He put his instrument down, I think, or he... I can't remember. He put the instrument down. I know he walked out of the room. And they had to go, whoever was organizing it, had to go and convince him to come back.
Wow.
And this is a paraphrase, but I will use one word that I remember that he used when he said it. This is rough, but Mr. Skip would appreciate it if you would cease vocalizing while he is creating his art. And people did. They finally shut the you know what. And he played the rest of the show. But it was a curtailed set, unfortunately, because I think he was still, you know, rip shit.
I don't blame him.
The other thing that he did, which I loved, was then he got on the piano and he played the song all night long. Except he sang the filthiest, absolutely filthiest verses. And he had a whole store load of them. And here he is at this university, and he's just pounding the piano and singing these filthy verses and clearly loving it.
Well,
loving it. He's like, here it is.
There you go. So did you take that that learning and that attitude into your own recordings? Or your own performances,
what,
I should say.
What I took was... to aspire to be artful, because clearly he was. He was an artist. To aspire to it. And then, if I got anywhere close to it, to try to value it. Because you'll find in the world that not everyone will respond in kind. Even if you are doing something you feel is artful, they might not necessarily recognize it or appreciate it or care about it. They might talk over it. They might put the TV on over it. And I don't walk out of the room or any of that, but mm-hmm. but just to hold, I kind of hold it inside, just like have a center, have a moral code.
Yeah, and just understand that what you're doing is important.
Right. Even if it's only to a few people and my cat.
Yeah. And you made the point that these people had paid
Doremi,
so
a lot of them.
You'd think that if they're paying to hear that they would, yeah, there you go.
You'd think so. But.
So, in moving time once again, you know, moving forward, you've got a new record out.
I do.
Came out last year.
Yeah.
Called Everybody Wants to Go to Heaven. And when I play it, I always joke, I say, who wouldn't want to do that? I mean, it's true. Yeah. But I'm asking you, how did you come up with that particular title?
So, that record was produced by my dear friend Marco Giovino, who is an incredible percussionist, drummer, producer. People would probably know him from having played with Robert Plant in the Band of Joy and Buddy Miller.
Okay.
Buddy
and Julie
others.
Fame.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And he's got a unique, completely unique sound. And I love the lyric in Everybody Wants to Go to Heaven. It's got both spiritual and even political implications, but they're not sort of in your face. But I learned it from an Albert King record, but, you know, again, the impossibility of successfully imitating Albert King. I mean, it's not on. You're not going to be able, I'm not going to be able to do it.
Yeah.
I love Albert's singing. I love his playing. The guitar bends are incredible. But, I mean, he did it, and it's sort of at the highest level, and it's there. It's on record. So I had to find a different way into it, and I knew that I wanted it to be more almost ambient, you know, kind of very evocative and ambient. And Marco assembled an amazing band, and on that particular track, it's Luther Dickinson from the North Mississippi All-Stars, and a guy named Dominic John Davis who plays with Jack White. So that's the level of person. So at that point, you just, you have to really, you have to hold your own.
Yes.
You have to not fold. You know, you gotta hold your own and try to play something and sing something that has some meaning. And like I say, I do love those lyrics, but I wanted to try to cast them in a very different musical setting. Still blues or bluesy, but maybe leaning a bit more modern, you know, and definitely not, out of respect, not trying to imitate the Albert King version.
Of course, understand. Yeah. Well, you know, that I've got the record right here. I always do this to prove I've got it. And I there's something about song one, track one,
yeah,
you know, that I love to play. So with your permission, I'd love to give everybody a listen to what you do.
Cool.
This is from the latest record called Everybody Wants to Go to Heaven. And track one is called World Keep On Turning. Do you want to say anything about it, or we'll talk about it afterwards?
It's a Peter Green song, and I heard him do it as a solo piece. And again, I wanted to try to cast it a little bit differently. I wanted to try it as a band track. And again, I'm really drawn to the lyric. The world does keep on turning, and you do have to keep your feet, at least metaphorically, on the ground.
You do. All right, everybody. Peter Parsek, song one, track one, from the latest record, Everybody Wants to Go to Heaven. This is World Cup Keep on Turning, WMFO, Medford.
Flow with tears of blue. the clouds of overflow with tears of blue. Every drop of rain that falls reminds me of you. The windshields are blurred, I can't see through. Yes, the windshields are blurred, I can't see through. Every drop of rain that falls reminds me of you.
WMFO, Medford 1038 in the morning here. Wonderful to hear that from Peter's latest album, called Everybody Wants to Go to Heaven. First we heard side one, track one, if you will, World Keep on Turning. And then from that same record, we heard Every Drop of Rain. We talked a little bit about World Keep on Turning, but what about Every Drop of Rain? I love that track, Peter.
Oh, thank you.
Love that.
That means a lot to me. That's a song about my mom.
Oh, okay.
And she had passed away, and I wanted to do a tribute to her and capture, if I could, the way she encouraged me to be creative and encouraged me to kind of stay in touch with my soul. And what's funny about that track is that's Marco Giovino and Dennis Crouch. Amazing bass player. And I don't drink. I have lots of reasons why I don't drink, familial reasons. But before we cut that track, Dennis is a moonshine aficionado. And he brought a whole, like, segment of various types of moonshine. And they put it out. And Marco tried some. Dennis tried some. I didn't. Mm-hmm. And Marco said, "You got to try some, man." Now, this is in Nashville, okay? I went to Nashville to record these tracks in Marco's house.
Really?
He's like, "You got to try some, man." I said, "Man, you know I don't drink. Come on." He's like, "You got to try some." And Dennis said, if you don't try some, we're not going to cut this track with you.
Brother.
Yeah, we're not going to cut this track with you. And so Marco's like, be a man. Drink some of this, you know. So, okay, I was like, all right, fine. So they give me one they say is like really smooth.
So I know what's coming.
Yeah, so I drink this stuff. And it's like drinking turpentine. Mm-hmm. I mean, and so Marco's like, well, what do you think? I said, well, if I wanted this, I'd just go down to the hardware store and, you know, buy some turpentine, because this stuff is, it's like turpentine with just maybe sugar or whatever else.
Were they amused? Did they understand?
Yeah, oh, yeah, they told me they were laughing at me.
Okay.
And then they cut the track and they played brilliantly.
Brilliantly.
It was just a, you know, a way to kind of, you know, get me out of my comfort zone, but in a funny way set me up to do this, because it's such an emotional song, and I'm really proud of how it came out.
Oh, yeah.
And they were a huge part of it. I mean, that's what you're hearing is live, except I added a second guitar to it.
Oh.
That's how great those guys are. It's just scary.
Well, speaking of hearing you live, I mean, you're going to be playing out. You've got a couple of gigs I can talk about here.
Yeah.
The first is Saturday, September 29th. It's an afternoon show at 4 at Atwood's Tavern.
Yes.
Celebrating the music of Buddy Guy.
Yeah, well, you know, I got to pay it back. I mean,
yep.
Huge influence. I've learned a ton from his guitar playing and singing. And so I'm going to do a set, you know, basically of the new record. And then I've got some really great special guests, Danielle Moralia,
yep.
Jay Scheffler,
Jonathan. Klompas.
Yeah, Joe Klompas, Bob Nisi, Jonathan LeMaster.
Jim Chilson.
And James Carnazzo, who's a great harp player. We're going to have all those folks. I'm going to do some things from Buddy's collaborations with Junior Wells, from A Man in the Blues, all the way up through his latest record, The Blues is Alive and Well.
Wonderful.
And we're looking forward to it.
Atwood's Tavern in Cambridge, Saturday the 29th of September.
Yeah.
Afternoon show, 4 o'clock. Then in Manchester, New Hampshire, Friday, October 12th at 9 p.m. at Strange Brew, Blues Ancient and Modern by the Peter Parsec Trio.
Yep, that's what we aim for.
And one you just got, I guess, in Putnam, Connecticut, close to your home, the Stomping Ground, Sunday, September 16th. Oh, those are backwards. Oh, well. Sunday, September 16th, 1 o'clock to 4 p.m. Can't do anything about it now, can we?
Well, we're able to shift time.
Thank you very much. The Stomping Ground, middle of September. Wonderful. And by the way, if you want more information about Peter and his work, his official website is peterparsecband.com. And you sell your work, your wonderful recordings at CD Baby. And I've included the link in the write-up that I did on Facebook to be able to go there and purchase these things.
So, Thank you, brother.
You're welcome. So we've talked enough about your playing.
Yeah.
Would you treat us to some live stuff?
Sure. I'd like to do a Sonny Boy Williamson 1 song.
Absolutely.
All right.
Live, everybody, in Studio A at WMFO. This is the great Peter Parsec.
Got apples on your tree, peaches on your shelf. You know, little mama, you can squeeze them all yourself. Let me be your lemon squeezer. Watch them in your lonesome town. I like to be your lemon squeezer till my love come down. Make no difference, baby, what your mama don't allow. I gotta squeeze those lemons, I mean anyhow. Like to be a lemon squeezer whilst I'm in your lonesome town. I like to be your lemon squeezer till my love come down. Ain't but the one thing, baby, really make me cry. I ask about the lemons in you, up and tell me a lie. I like to be a lemon squeezer whilst I'm in your lonesome town. Let me be a lemon squeezer till my love come down. Like the apples on your tree, crazy about your peaches too. I love your fruit, baby, you know just how to do. Let me be your lemon squeezer whilst I'm in your lonesome town. Let me be your lemon squeezer till my love come down.
Wonderful, sir. Would you do another one?
Sure, man.
Thank you. Do another one.
Just give me a second here. Hey. I ride on a mail train, baby, I can't buy the thrill. Been up all night, leaning on the windowsill. If I die on top of the hill, well, if I don't make it, you know my baby will. Don't the moon look good, mama, shining through the trees? Don't a brake man look good, flagging down the double E? Don't the sun look good, going down over the sea? Don't my gal look fine when she's coming after me? Thank you.
wintertime's coming. Windows are filled with frost. Winter chill everybody, but I could not get across. I wanna be your lover, baby. Don't wanna be your boss. Don't say I never warned you when your train gets lost.
That was wonderful, sir. What was the name of that?
It takes a lot to laugh. It takes a train to cry.
Of course, there's a lot for me to have to type in. There you go.
Sorry about that.
And who's the original artist on that one?
Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan. Mm-hmm. Well, I we're running out of time. That's also going to be on my epitaph. I'd like to play something from a previous album of yours called The Mathematics of Love.
Cool.
But first, I want to play a public service announcement, because if I don't, they'll be mad at me. So we're going to play a PSA, and we'll be back and play this, and then finish up here with Peter Parsek.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. This cat makes me make art. He's always motivating me to draw pictures of him. He just is motivating artistically. He's my best friend, but a lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
Keyboard Cat, YouTube star and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Start yours today. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
It's WMFO, 10:52 in the morning. Peter, I want to talk about a previous record called The Mathematics of Love. About what time frame are we talking about?
It's around 2010, 2011.
Okay, so just before this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you working on something new, I think you told me?
I'm actually working on two records at once right now.
Is that a good idea?
Well, you know, it's part of the Polish-Sicilian thing. You just bite off more than you can chew, and then... You know, hopefully you don't choke.
Same with juice. But anyway, you were talking about track number 6, Tears Like Diamonds.
Yes, I'm proud of that one.
A little bit about that one, please.
Well, so it actually, like many things, comes out of a direct experience. And I had been in love with someone I moved to Boston to be with. And she left over the holidays. It's sort of, yeah, it's like perfect timing, right? You know, crawling around the floor looking for insight. But, no, all kidding aside, it's about that. And I had gone to New York to be with friends thinking that would help. And, you know, I guess it helped because I got a song out of it.
Yeah, what else matters? All right, from the record back in around 2010, it's called The Mathematics of Love. This is Tears Like Diamonds with Peter Kroner on the floor at WMFO, Medford.
The ground. I cried tears like diamond, froze before they hit the ground. I waited all night on my bay while the snow was drifting down. My room was so quiet, I couldn't fall asleep. My room was so quiet, I couldn't fall asleep. And the morning sun was too bright, I couldn't eat. Thank you.
last night. Only know it wasn't with me. I don't know where you slept last night. Only know it wasn't with me. I cried tears like diamonds, and I watched them freeze.
WMFO Medford, Peter Parsec, and from an earlier record called The Mathematics of Love, that was Tears Like Diamonds. Geez, I'm sad to say it's 10:57. We have to finish up with you here. I'd like to play one more from your latest CD here called Everybody Wants to Go to Heaven. And we talked about an instrumental called Pat Hare, P-A-T-H-A-R-E. What's the genesis of that?
Well, Pat Hare was an early electric guitar genius, played with Junior Parker, Muddy Waters, and others. And he was one of the pioneers of this sound that it sounds like maybe the amp's about to explode. But, you know, back then they had to do it with slicing the speaker or, you know, turning the thing up to patent pending and hoping for the best, maybe loosening the tubes. And he was just a brilliant, brilliant sonic innovator, and I wanted to pay tribute to him. And also, a lot of times, you know, I think it's good to look back at the, you know, you're in a lineage if you're playing this kind of guitar. And he's right. Not somebody that people talk about so much, so I wanted to kind of bring a spotlight to him. I love Pat Hare.
Gotcha. It's Peter Parsec finishing us off. We'll come back and say goodbye and say hi to Kirsten right after this. WMFO.